Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, it's graduation season, a promising time for a new crop of graduates being launched into their futures with words of wisdom from thought leaders helping to send them on their way.
Well, it's always exciting to see literally thousands of people in our state going off into their great futures, and a real excitement among those in the health professions that are really poised to make a transformative impact on healthcare delivery as we move into this era of great reform and innovation. It's very exciting for them.
You know, Secretary of Health and Human Services Kathleen Sebelius used her commencement speech at Georgetown's Public Policy Institute to highlight the healthcare debate over the Affordable Care Act. There were some protests at the commencement over the directive that institutions must provide birth control coverage to all women without a copay. Secretary Sebelius used her speech to call for a conversation and compromise. I like that, on the weighty issue.
And the secretary also noted that after a debate that has spanned seven decades, she now has the privilege of presiding over implementation of true health care reform that will provide access to affordable health for all Americans, something I think after seven decades, long overdue.
On the topic of the Affordable Care Act, Secretary Sebelius is urging college presidents around the country to remind students about the provision in the healthcare law that allows young adults to stay on their parents' health insurance plan until their age of 26 if they need to. And millions of Americans have already enjoyed that provision of the law.
They have, and the debate goes on. But the reality is graduates are leaving school these days, and young people who haven't had the opportunity to go to college are also finding they have heavy debts, diminished job prospects. So this is a great relief for the young people.
It's good news for everyone. Secretary Sebelius has made all the relevant information graduates and their parents might need available on the Health and Human Services website, www.healthcare.gov.
And somebody who knows young people well is our guest today, Mark, who is due to receive an honorary degree at the Wesleyan University commencement here in Connecticut. Cecile Richards is the president of the Planned Parenthood Federation of America. Planned Parenthood is the nation's largest provider of reproductive health services, serving over 3 million people per year, not just with family planning, but also with health screenings and basic health care.
She's being awarded an honorary degree for the work she does in providing health care to the underserved. She'll be talking about the transformation underway at Planned Parenthood to better serve a growing patient population through direct personal health care as well as through the internet.
And this week, FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson has a look at misrepresented facts from the world of politics and healthcare. But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And if you have comments, email us at chcradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'll get to Cecile Richards in just a moment. But first, here's our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news. A group of Catholic institutions across the country have filed numerous lawsuits in federal courts around the nation against the Obama administration's birth control provision in the Affordable Care Act. The rule requires all institutions to provide cost-free birth control to all of its female employees. 43 institutions, including Notre Dame University, Catholic University, and the Diocese of New York, filed suits claiming their freedom of religion was being compromised. The Obama administration had announced a compromise earlier this year that would allow these institutions resisting the benefit on religious grounds to have their insurers provide the coverage. Planned Parenthood President Cecile Richards says it's unbelievable in the year 2012 that we have to fight for women's access to basic birth control. Several governors around the nation are moving towards initiating reforms in their states, which fall in line with directives in the Affordable Care Act. Vermont Governor Peter Shumlin has signed into law a multi-year effort to revamp Vermont's health care system to make it more like Canada's. The bill calls for setting up a regulated health care marketplace or exchange as a springboard to launch a system that gets as close as possible to the single-payer system by 2017. Colorado's Governor John Hickenlooper signs into law this week a measure that will revamp the Medicaid reimbursement system in that state. The measure creates a process by which the state's health care policy and financing department would test fee-for-service alternatives like regional care collaborative organizations, global payments, risk-sharing, and payment incentive. Meantime, where do those health care dollars get spent? Most of the research has been done on public health expenditures such as Medicaid and Medicare, but a recent independent study looking at four of the nation's top insurers shows that while healthcare costs went up a relatively modest 3.3% in 2010, actual healthcare consuming went down slightly, meaning hospitals and practices were paid more for the same services. The only real cost that declined, generic drugs. I'm Marianne O'Hare with this headline news.
It's Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America and Planned Parenthood Action Fund. Planned Parenthood is the leading provider of family planning and reproductive health care in this country and serves about 3 million patients per year. Cecile, welcome back to Conversations in Healthcare.
Thanks.
Now, since you joined us on the show in March of last year, you've been running the gauntlet of challenges to Planned Parenthood, and we'll get to some of those controversies in a moment. But first, let's talk about women's health. Planned Parenthood was founded about 100 years ago and really has served as the front line for women's health for decades. And so many women come to Planned Parenthood as a point of entry for their health care. And increasingly, the number of your health centers are also providing family practice, prenatal care, and other kinds of care. Help us understand the big picture of the population you now serve and how has it changed in the recent years?
So Planned Parenthood, as you said, we're actually 96 years old this year. Each year we serve about 3 million patients, and they tend to be young women and women who don't have other sources of health care. And one of the interesting things in terms of changes is we actually are 10% of our patients now are men because increasingly young men rely on Planned Parenthood. Increasingly we are seen as a safe, comfortable, and confidential place to go to get tested and treated for STDs. And so we think that's a really important part of reproductive health care. What's changed in 96 years is we saw 3 million patients in our health centers for literally hands-on health care. But in the last month alone, we saw 4 million patients come to us online for either information about, you know, birth control, STDs, and actually I think this year half of the visitors online will be coming through smartphones. So that's the biggest change that I've seen and dramatically increased our outreach.
Millions of women have gotten their first and maybe their only breast exams at Planned Parenthood, and you launched the Close to the Heart campaign to increase awareness of Planned Parenthood's commitment to breast cancer screening with I think 750,000 exams provided last year alone. Tell us about that program and where that fits in with this expanding model of healthcare services at Planned Parenthood.
One of the most important things about so many women coming to Planned Parenthood as their first real adult doctor visit is that they come to us primarily for birth control, but it's an opportunity to then also provide women with a well woman visit. And because for so many women, that's the only medical visit they'll have. And I think, again, the Close to the Heart campaign was really an opportunity for women to share their stories about the breast care that they got at Planned Parenthood. And I think for a lot of young women, it is so important that they get on a sort of a pathway to early detection, early breast education. And I think that's a critical role that Planned Parenthood increasingly plays across the country.
Talk to us a little bit about how you're framing up with that chain. Where do you go next in terms of virtually providing information?
Well, as you say, it's a fascinating area because it's so dynamic. It's changing literally every month. It started out just as a way for young people to get information off the website. But then we realized, well, actually, it's not good enough unless it's digital and you know, available on a phone. So now everything's available on cell phones. And now we're moving into social media, which actually just launched a Tumblr site, which allows anyone, but particularly young people, to ask questions and get answers in real time. Because this generation, they expect information immediately. They don't want to, you know, well, I'll get back to you in a day or two.
Doesn't
and so
work.
I think the other thing and Planned Parenthood is really just on the cutting edge of this, but the rest of the medical field is going this direction as well. And that is trying to bring care to people where they are rather than insisting or assuming that folks will drive to a health center. I think telemedicine is being used for things like delivering birth control to folks. I think STD testing and treatment is going to increasingly happen in the home as opposed to at a health center. And so I think we are, with this huge integrated network that we have, being able to bring technology to where people are is hugely important. And I think particularly for care that sometimes, unfortunately, is not part of mainstream medicine. It should be. I know folks do a tremendous job there in Connecticut, but too many states, it's still difficult to find the kind of services that you need to stay healthy and safe.
Well, Cecile, I wonder if you'd share with us a little bit about the Chat Now button on your website where people can speak online with a health educator. Tell us how participants are seeking counseling and treatment in this way. Are you able to actually make treatment decisions over over the phone, or is it all counseling and direction? And how does that tie into the rest of the healthcare program that you're developing beyond reproductive care and STD treatment?
So we have now piloted a program that is a text and chat program, which allows folks to contact a Planned Parenthood staffer in real time about whatever's on their mind. We tend to hear from folks who really have a very pressing need, and usually a very pressing medical need. I'll give you an example. The other night, a young woman texted us, and she said, I'm pregnant. I don't want to be the operator at the other end. Was able to text her back and say, well, you know, glad you contacted us. What leads you to believe that, you know, you're pregnant? Have you had unprotected sex? And she texts back and says, yes, last night. So, of course, then it's possible, because this is all in real time, to say, well, you know what? There's a really important option available to you if you don't want to be pregnant, and that is emergency contraception. And the relief, even over the text, you could tell immediately this is something she didn't know that was available to her, and we were able to connect her, you know, with a provider. And that's the way I think healthcare now is going to be delivered. Do you think about the days that a young woman might have waited before she got the courage up to actually contact someone and say, you know, I think I'm in trouble. And this is something where we could actually avoid an unintended pregnancy in real time. And that's really our hope.
We're speaking today with Cecile Richards, president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the nation's leading provider of family planning and basic health screening for 3 million Americans per year. You're moving now to electronic health records at many of your clinics around the country. And we should note that those are all managed at the local level and information is kept very securely. But you're aggregating a lot of great information that will improve the public health planning. How are you doing the data mining, and how's that advancing the cause for better reproductive health?
I actually think this is one of the most exciting things that's happened. You're correct, Mark. We're going through this process of bringing our, you know, more than 750 health centers online so that everyone has data that is transferable. You know, we have a lot of folks who are, let's say, a patient, well, let's just say at Wesleyan, and they might go back home to Kansas for summer or for a holiday, literally being able to pull up a medical record across the country. It's critically important, and it's the kind of care that I think folks now expect. And since Planned Parenthood is in every state, it's really an essential part of healthcare. My plans at this point, by 2015, and we'll be completely on electronic health records all across the country. So once we're completely electronic, we'll have the single biggest database on reproductive healthcare in the world.
So Cecile is looking on the political frontier for a moment. The political season is heating up, and certainly women's health issues are going to be a big part of the rhetoric as we move through the election cycle, and we're awaiting the Supreme Court decision on the Affordable Care Act, which you've called one of the greatest advances in women's access to health care in a generation. So I'd like to talk about something we all are thinking about these days, which are threats to the Affordable Care Act, both the legal and the political attempts to undermine or overturn it. So, you know, maybe first let's look at the recent Supreme Court hearing on the Affordable Care Act. And what do you foresee happening for the patient population that Planned Parenthood serves today?
Well, it's a complicated answer, because no one knows what the Supreme Court will do. For women in particular, this has been extraordinarily important, because literally for the first time under the Affordable Care Act, insurers cannot charge women more for health insurance coverage than they charge men. I mean, this has been, gender rating has been a real issue for women forever. Ironically, because we reproduce, you know, our healthcare costs are greater because we have children. And that's just, you know, that's not going to change. And so it's wonderful to think now that we can get equity in terms of cost of insurance. The second thing that I know has been discussed a great deal, women and men can no longer be refused insurance coverage because of a pre-existing condition. Women have been denied insurance coverage for things like being victims of domestic violence in the past or having had a cesarean section. So this is a very important piece of the Affordable Care Act as well. And then I think lastly, the fact that women's preventive care for the first time is going to be covered with no expensive copay and no deductible, which of course is going to be great for women because they can actually stay healthier, save money, and frankly, it's good for society. So the thought that now mammograms, pap smears, birth control will be covered at no copay is going to be, again, a good thing for the health of the country.
The political climate, some have described as fostering a war on women. Numerous states, including your own former home state, Texas, has attempted to cut funding to Planned Parenthood. I saw that Arizona is also taken similar actions, but you're facing these enormous challenges at state levels, at the national level. The Blunt Amendment is seeking to cut all funds to Planned Parenthood. That was narrowly defeated. And on one hand, there's been an interesting reaction. The attack seemed to have galvanized a new round of supporters, which is good news. But still, the flip side is that you are, on one hand, trying to provide needed reproductive services. And on another hand, you seem to be fighting more than skirmishes at both state levels and national levels. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Here's what I think the real struggle is not so much for Planned Parenthood, in that our doors are still open. The real concern, and actually this came out in the court case in Texas, is that for low-income women, and particularly a lot of young women who are uninsured, Planned Parenthood is often their only source of health care. And so the concern that we're trying to continue to elevate is, where are women going to go for care? Because when it comes to providing birth control, basic family planning, basic preventive care, that's care that is unfortunately woefully unavailable in a lot of parts of the country. In the states where they have tried, strictly for political reasons, to ban women from going to Planned Parenthood, that's largely been stopped. But it is a state-by-state battle. I think in this presidential election, the issue of whether women should have access to basic preventive care, which is what's at issue here. None of this is about abortion services. This is all about access to birth control, cancer screenings, STD testing. That's what's at issue here. And I think whether or not we want a country that continues to actually provide those services, or whether we're going to abandon decades of access to care, is really going to be a defining issue, I think, in the presidential election, if you can believe it.
Cecile, we were just delighted to learn that you'll be receiving an honorary degree at Wesleyan University this month, right here in Middletown, Connecticut. And last year, some Wesleyan students produced their own video in support of Planned Parenthood that quickly went viral, about 350,000 views. It seems it must be very encouraging to you and the organization to see that it's also maybe a countervailing increase in your base of support and new spirit of activism.
Well, thanks for that question. First, I have to give a shout out just to embarrass my daughter, who's a junior at Wesleyan, and say what an outstanding campus it is. And the students that, again, have been active in supporting Planned Parenthood have been fantastic. Look, what we've seen in the last year has been an outpouring of new support for Planned Parenthood, and many of it from past, what I think of as the great alumni of Planned Parenthood, the one in five women in the country who've been to a Planned Parenthood health center, but also from a whole new generation, not only of young women, but of young men as well. And that's what I think has been so gratifying, frankly, is that I believe that the issues of access to reproductive health care are no longer seen as simply a women's issue, but they're seen as an issue for all of society. We've had, in the last year alone, more than 1 million brand new supporters, and half of them are young people. It's very exciting to see the next generation of leaders of this movement. And I guess if there's lemonade to be made out of the lemons that we've had this year, it's certainly to see the young people who've gotten involved.
But also, you said you were an organizer, and there's probably not a state that you go into that people don't ask you the question, what are your plans, trying to persuade you to run for political office? You come from a political family. Your mom, great woman, governor of Texas, and you've also worked for Nancy Pelosi. So what's the future look like for you as well?
Well, the truth is I love what I'm doing. And I feel like, I'm incredibly grateful for the extraordinary people that hold public office, folks in Congress. Kathleen Sebelius, the Secretary of HHS, has done extraordinary things to improve the lives of women all over the country. But I feel like we're playing a critical role, and I hope I am, being a small part of that at Planned Parenthood, to ensure and push forward policies that advance the health care of women and men in this country.
Cecile, we like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and around the world, what do you see in terms of innovation that our listeners at Conversations should be keeping an eye on?
Look, I think that we're just on the cusp of understanding how technology is going to improve the lives of people, not only in this country, but as you say, globally, in terms of information, access to care. I think telemedicine for preventive care is going to be very important to Planned Parenthood, but I think it's going to be important beyond that, and really help us reach into areas, whether it's rural areas or places, frankly, where the politics have made it difficult for folks to openly go and seek services for birth control, other, STD testing and treatment. I think it is extremely exciting. And again, what I think of, I try to put it in this context, 96 years ago, Margaret Sanger was arrested for simply handing out pamphlets about birth control. And yet, last month alone, Planned Parenthood provided 4 million people with information about the very same thing. So sometimes even in these difficult political times, you have to measure where progress is happening. And really, that's where I see just incredibly bright future.
We've been speaking today with Cecile Richards, President and CEO of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, the nation's largest provider of low-cost health care and family planning in America, serving over 3 million patients a year. Cecile, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
Mark and Margaret, thank you so much. Thanks for what you do in Connecticut, and I appreciate you having me on.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney has repeatedly said that government will make up, quote, almost 50% of the U.S. economy once the federal health care law is fully in effect. But what we found is that Romney's counting all health care spending, both private and public, to come up with that claim. What he has said is that local, state, and federal governments consume 38% of gross domestic product now. That's using the most expansive measurement of government spending, but we won't quibble too much with that. He then says the federal health care law will bring that up to almost 50%. His spokesman told us that the 50% includes all national health care spending and that all health care would be, quote, effectively under government control once the law is fully implemented. But that's nonsense. Both Medicaid and the private insurance market will expand under the law, just as they both did in Massachusetts under the health care overhaul that Romney signed into law as governor. The truth is the federal law will cause a minor expansion in the government's share of the nation's spending on health care. All government spending was 43.6% of the total national health care spending in 2009, and by 2020, it will account for just 49.2%, according to projections from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, so a fairly small increase. And much of that increase would be due to the baby boom generation entering Medicare. And that's our fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives.
When Jennifer Staple Clark was a sophomore at Yale, an internship at the ophthalmology office turned out to be a life-transforming experience. She realized that many of the patients who had limited access to medical care were coming into the office with serious eye conditions that had gone past the point of reversing, leading to unnecessary blindness. What she launched from her dorm room 11 years ago was a local initiative to improve access to preventative eye care to the neediest population in her local community. Her vision quickly grew. Within 2 years, she took her organization, Unite for Sight, worldwide, and has since turned it into one of the leading providers of global eye care in hundreds of communities around the world. Unite for Sight brings social entrepreneurs, public health experts, local eye surgeons, and volunteers together to bring eye care into some of the most underserved areas of the world. The motto at Unite for Sight is that local problems need local solutions, so they use each country's existing pool of ophthalmologists and eye surgeons to treat their local patients. They also train community health workers in each area they serve, thus removing traditional barriers to eye care experienced by many in extreme poverty, and also ensuring a continuum of care for all of the patients they serve. The community health workers provide education and transportation to get doctors to the patients' communities and patients to the hospital if surgery is indicated. Since its inception, Unite for Sight has served 1.4 million patients worldwide and restored eye site to roughly 55,000 people, restoring not only their site, but their dignity and ability to be productive members of their communities as well. Identifying a pressing medical need, using global health delivery models, and improving the quality of life by offering basic preventative eye care to those who had previously gone without. Now that's a bright idea.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of Wesleyan University at WESU, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.